You're listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. Tonight we talk about director Stanley Kubrick's film, The Killing.
You no trouble. Me, fifth element. Supreme being.
You will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death, praying for war. But until that day, you are cute. Sound off like you got a bear.
Yes, I was wondering what would break first. Your spirit or your money?
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
God is dead.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Dead.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes, the dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Welcome to the podcast, Movie Crew Podcast, Movie Makers Talking Movies. We're your hosts. I'm editor Brian Elkins on episode 400.
Yay!
And with me tonight is cinematographer Jared Gallen.
How you doing, Brian?
I'm good. You know, four days ago, across the other side of town, I walked out of my apartment. I'm spoiling the movie. No, sorry. I was getting in the VO. We also have with us director of photography, Mike Griggs.
I was going to be a meatball tonight, but I figured I'd rather be a meatball with gravy. Because apparently that's a thing to call someone.
It's because you're rich. You're rich.
Oh, wait. You were a fucking meatball with gravy. Is it like that?
I guess.
Or is it like, oh, yo, meatball with gravy looking ass?
That meatball?
A meatball with gravy.
No, you made it sexual.
All right. Moving on.
That's not where I've made a huge mistake.
And we also have with us costume designer Kristen Jones.
Hello.
Hey. And 400th episode, you know we're going to be talking about some Kubrick here. So we're not disappointing. We're going all the way back to 1956.
Long time.
Hey, it's not as far back as last week's episode, so we're moving forward a little
bit.
Oh,
no, that's true. Yeah. We have moved forward in time, but to the beginning of Kubrick's career. Wasn't this like his first studio movie or first movie with budget or some shit? Like what? I know it wasn't his first movie, but what was the big deal about this one?
I think it's the first one that Kubrick recognizes as like, I am now a filmmaker. I know how to like actually tell a story with the camera and it doesn't suck. This is the one that he viewed as, you know, this is my first real movie.
So it was his coming out party, even if he had already directed a couple little things here and there before. Okay, I accept that.
Which one day we'll talk about Fear and Desire and Killer's Kiss, but dear God.
That's like episode 700.
You see, we should have done those first, and, you know, just to kind of get them out of the way, that way we could work toward the...
Well, like a dual Kubrick episode?
No. Just like the first couple 50 episodes that we did, we should have done, you know, we should have just threw some random Kubrick in there.
Well, up until a couple months ago, Jared, you couldn't even find Fear and Desire. It was not available.
Damn.
Because Kubrick was like, guess what? Nobody is ever fucking watching this film. I think the film print was it was owned by someone like who owned a movie theater or like worked in the Library of Congress or something that just held on to this thing. And that's how that movie survived.
Wow.
But it was
released. That, collectors? It's a big fucking deal. Keep collecting.
That film was released, or was it something that was never released?
It was released, yeah.
Okay. Well,
back in the day.
Held on to it. Yeah, that's good.
That one person. Thank God.
Well, you know, you're never going to have a rerun or, you know, any other like physical
What's
media
a rerun?
For people. Yeah, what is that? Once a film's out of the theaters, it's just gone forever.
No, they stayed around forever back then, you know, because they didn't have TV. You know, if you wanted to watch something again, you had to go to the movie theater. You know, you wanted your news? Went to a movie theater.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was also 5 cents a ticket.
Yeah.
Or a penny.
When are we bringing them back?
Yeah, right? Give me those Tuesdays.
Yeah, but your popcorn will be $30.
I would accept
my
that.
Own popcorn.
$50 bucket of popcorn. 1 cent ticket. I would take that trade. Oh, I guess we were talking about, since somebody brought up last week's episode of The Maltese Falcon, did you guys notice the actor carry over here?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Immediately. I was like, hey, I've seen him before. When have I? Oh, right. Just then. That was last week. Okay, cool.
I totally forgot he was in there. I was like, oh, look at that. I love it when accidents like that happen. It looks like we planned it.
Yeah, totally not planned at all.
We totally planned it. What are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about.
But also, that guy's been in a lot of movies. What's his name? Elijah Cook Jr. He was Wilmer in the Maltese Falcon. He's the guy that had the boxy trench coat on. And in this one, he's like one of my favorite characters. I just feel so bad for him the whole fucking time, man. You know? Damn.
Oh,
can
man.
The guy not just catch a fucking break?
Yeah. Worst wife in film history. Like, I'm fucking just terrible. Just fucking terrible. Doesn't really do anything like that terrible, like in terms of like she didn't murder anybody or anything like that. But gosh,
she just has no emotions, man. She's just like just heartless, man.
My partner said, "Does Kubrick hate women?" Just watching this character.
Yes,
and I'm like, yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment.
Well, I think judging on all of the female characters, that would be an interesting assessment. Not just this one character.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because Johnny Girl, like her first introduction, she's like, you can't leave me. I'm just not smart and I'm not pretty.
Oh, my
yeah,
God,
not
right?
Pretty.
Holy
like, what
shit,
the
what the fuck is that?
When's the last time you looked in a mirror? What are we talking about?
Not smart and not pretty and, oh, no, she's been talking too much.
Yeah.
Oh, Johnny, look, I'm rambling. And, you know, here, I haven't seen you,
you know,
in 5 years.
I
and
always
here I go.
Trust you. I don't care what the plan is. You're so smart.
Oh, I wrote God, that down. She's
was,
like, look at
that
me.
That was rough.
She's like, look at me. It's the first time we've been together in 5 years, and here I am making speeches. Like,
and then the dude comes in, and she's like, should I stay? And he's like, she's piecing the fuck out. Sorry, she's here still. I'm sorry.
Well, they've got like a weird
seen
little
her
love
in
affair
5 years.
Going on.
Yeah, no, they definitely. Yeah,
there's something going
he's
on
like,
there.
Ooh, you're daddy. Like, wait, ho, what? Because at the end of the movie, when he's like, "I wish you were my son," I was like, "Just make out, please." Just
you know, and then he's like, you know, you don't want to get into a bad marriage, do you? You know, we should run away together, you know.
So, actually, speaking of that, I was wondering like how much of the slang we were not picking up on.
Oh yeah, it had to be right.
How much of this the subtext that in the context
yeah,
of the time?
Yeah, how much was intended for sure? I was questioning that the entire time because I was like, "Hello."
Yeah, because doesn't he get like super drunk? He wasn't supposed to go to the
correct.
Track at
yeah.
all, and then he's like. Well, if Johnny doesn't want to be with me, then I'm going to go get fucking soused and go to the track anyways.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. And that's not paid off at the end or
no.
Nothing bad really comes from it, you know.
Everybody's well, shocked to see it, and they're like, holy shit, dude's here.
Did he show up at the end?
Yeah, he's in the apartment at the end. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he gets killed.
Right. I know everybody dies, but...
That shootout scene is confusingly shot at the very end.
Which shootout scene?
The shootout.
The one in the apartment before he leaves for the
the
airport or whatever. Yeah, okay.
When the guy that's like a two-time in George's girl was, I forget.
Confusingly shot is a gentle way to put it, because I definitely was like, wait, did those two guys also get shot? Why are they on the ground? And then they have like close up of like those little pellet things. I'm like, okay, I guess they got shot. What?
I mean, well, Wilmer, who is what's his name in this one?
George
is firing at them. The two guys who come in, they have a shotgun, but I think they only get one shot off.
Yeah, the dude with the shotgun gets one shot. But there's
another
guy with a pistol.
And he kills everybody in the room?
No, there's a guy with a pistol that comes in with him, but he's off screen when the shooting's happening.
Oh, okay, that's what it is. That's what's weird.
There's a whole bunch of shit that's weird. Like, that whole sequence starts. I had to rewind it and watch it four times because I was like, what the fuck is wrong with the geography in this scene? The scene starts, and there's like this, I don't know, like a little breakfast counter area right that's behind them, and it's got a couch. And they're standing in front of that when the door opens, and these two guys come in. That's pretty much where they stay when the shootout happens. And then afterwards, right after, we cut into like George's POV because he's the only person still alive in the room. And he's looking around and the people are now on the other side of the room
upside down.
Yeah, some of them are upside
down. Laying down, yeah.
Like they were.
When you get shot with a shotgun, you blow back. This is early.
Yeah,
event,
they're all
you know.
Strewn about, and I was so yeah. fucking confused.
But they went through that little kitchen window cutout.
It's a powerful shotgun.
All three of them?
Yes.
There was like, wasn't it three? It was three or four, right? No, it was three because George left the room. Yeah.
Well, it's also when George kills Sherry in the next scene. That's kind of weak too. I don't know. I guess couldn't really do blood back then. It didn't really seem like she was actually shot. And did he shoot her on purpose, or was that just like a muscle spasm type thing? Because it seemed like he was shocked that he even pulled the trigger there.
Yeah, I think he wanted to kill her, but he was shocked that he had the balls to do it.
Yeah, he was shocked he finally went through with this thing that he had been just like.
Well, to be fair, she deserved it. Oh, fuck.
And she's even got like, as she's dying, she's like, I couldn't
she's
even.
Like, you son of a bitch.
Couldn't have anything. Couldn't have a husband or even a man.
Could you get a real husband?
It's a joke without a punchline. It's like, what the hell? You're a cunt while you're dying. You gotta say some fucked up shit, man.
I have to say, when she first came on, she was really atrocious, and she's still atrocious. But like, I ended up like, I was like, okay, this is an interesting character, and I don't know that I ended up liking her, but I could appreciate where she was going with her unhappiness, maybe.
I couldn't. I was like, you're staying with this guy in the hopes that he's going to get rich, and then you're going to, take all his money, or you're going to leave him before then?
Hmm.
I don't understand, like, what she wanted out of life.
Well, I don't think she knew what she wanted out of life, and I think that's why she ended up with someone who's also really unhappy with life. I feel like they were kind of the perfect match.
I don't know. That was a toxic-ass relationship. Mm.
I didn't say it was healthy by any means, but I think he's going to, if he had survived, he would find someone who was just like her after her.
Sherry, can I ever say anything without you joking me about it? Just like, damn.
God damn.
Just give me a fucking break.
And by joking, I mean being a stone cold bitch.
I think that's what I enjoyed about it, is that they're so awful to each other. And I was just like, yeah, this is actually, it was more fun to watch it play out in this movie than it is in maybe more modern movies where it's just like painful. Like, this was bad, but like, it was enjoyable to watch.
She gets so fucking manipulative every time she like just doesn't get it, and then she twists it, and that's where I see the most like Kubrickian kind of parts of it, is in their relationship and the way that he plays them off of each other.
Yeah,
because those are long takes too. Like he camps out there for a while,
but they're so cool. I love that fucking like bouncing back and forth dolly shot. They're just like sliding back and forth. As the husband goes from one side of the shoulder to the other, because he's just pacing around because he's such a bitch. He's a pussy guy. He has no self-respect at all. He's like, oh.
But I know. That's what I'm saying. That's why he's with her, is because she doesn't respect him. And he's like, this is what I deserve. He doesn't deserve the I'm talking too much woman, because he doesn't respect himself. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, no, that's a really good comparison. Yeah.
Because if he was with somebody like that, he would be like, well, aren't you stupid? Because I am not that person. You shouldn't trust me. He needs someone who doesn't believe in him. I thought they were matched really well.
They were perfect, yeah.
They were destined to kill each other at some point.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It was beautiful.
Poor George. He is probably the best character in the movie, though.
He is.
Because, I mean, like, I don't know. He's easy to sympathize with and hate at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, I really didn't feel bad for him for most of it because, again, I feel like he just invites all of this on himself.
I feel a little bad for him when his girl is like, they catch her like trying to listen through the fucking keyhole or some shit.
Yeah, but he talked when he wasn't supposed to. And he told a woman who hates him. Come on. Like,
yeah, but she instantly, she gets busted, and then she tries to sleep with Johnny just to get out of it.
Yeah,
even though he's
she's willing to do whatever she needs to do to
which
get what
is
she
an
wants.
Yes, so that's which is an interesting part of her character. But the second she wakes up, she's just like, "Oh hi!" There's absolutely no fear. There's nothing like, I don't know. That kind of bothered. That was the only part that kind of bothered me.
I think they knew that she wasn't asleep, and that's why he winks when he's like, "I'm gonna have to slap her around so her face becomes hamburger meat." And he's like, "Go on and get out of here for at least an hour." He's like, "Okay, I'll be back in 2 hours." So he kind of winks at him there. I think he knows that she's not really asleep or knocked out.
Oh, I thought he just winked, so like, I'm not really going to turn her face into hamburger.
I don't know.
I bet you he would have.
I bet he would, yeah. I like that they slap George instead of punching him in that one. They just smack the shit out of him.
It's so demeaning, and it's so perfect for his character. Yeah, absolutely.
Fucking poor George. And then they escort him out of the room, and his wife is still staying there. That made me feel a little bad. I was like,
that was the one part where I was like, dude, you're not gonna like be like, what the fuck? Can you take care of my wife? Like, he didn't
he was like, you're not gonna hurt her, are you? He did do that. You know, he's
the bare minimum.
Yeah, he's like, please hurt her. You're not gonna, right? Please hurt.
Teach her a lesson.
Made a last-ditch plea as he was being manhandled out the door. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, it's a bad look for everybody.
I didn't say anything honest.
He is so that guy, man.
Yeah.
Come on, fellas. You believe me?
And I do like the other bartender guy that's got the wife at home that I don't know what her illness is, why she's in bed. There's like a syringe on the table. Sick, but
yeah.
Is she doing drugs? Is she on drugs? Is she just like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory? Like she just doesn't want to get up and take a shit until the... like...
It was just as well as explained as that.
Yeah. We don't people. Know.
They're bedridden, are we right? Come on.
Gee, don't worry, darling. We'll be rich soon and we'll be able to get you better and get you the best doctors. Oh, you know.
Oh God! I struggled with that scene. Like that was like real, real fucking heavy-handed. Like,
but all
right,
this
cool.
Felt like that,
we get
though.
It. It's such heavy exposition, but that one felt more like I have to like deliver it this way.
Yeah,
felt
we're leaning on the audience for some feels.
Yeah, that part didn't work for me at all. I was like, okay, we get it. Move the fuck on. Like you could have just he could have walked in, seen her like bedridden, and like moved on, and we would have gotten it. Like, okay, everybody has something that they're doing it for, and then they spent like 7 minutes just sitting there with her, and I was like, oh.
That was around the time where I was glad that it wasn't like Ocean's 11 where we had to set up all these people's timelines, because every single one of them is pretty much the same. All right, we got to go to this person, we got to get them in on it. We got to get, you know, even the dude with the one tooth in the middle of his mouth, which is really fucking weird. Like, you know, he likes to talk through his teeth and doesn't actually open his fucking mouth.
He refuses the entire movie to open his fucking teeth.
That was bothering the shit out of me. I was like, what is this?
So
why don't you fucking open your mouth when you talk, you son of a bitch? You know.
I kept thinking, I was like, is he chewing on something? He's got something in his mouth. Nothing is in that dude's mouth.
Not. He's got, you know, most people like he had the buck teeth, the two in the middle. He's got one right in the middle, like center under his nose, one tooth right there. And it's fucking wicked and weird looking.
He's like, I don't open my mouth all the way because of that.
No, Cooper was like, I need you to like, you know, show that weird tooth off.
Give us
you
some
know,
intensity, that, he says.
I guess.
You like intensity? I'll show you intensity.
Yeah, there it is. Now, give me that. Now, say the N-word.
Ooh. Yeah, I didn't understand that scene. It was trying to like
was the guy trying to pick him up because he tipped him?
I also wondered that.
Well, like, no, yeah, I wasn't was wondering little, that. Yeah. I was wondering about his bum leg, like how he was like I didn't once think that anybody was gay in that scene. You guys were thinking like the dude was trying to pick him up in the parking lot? Like
he kept coming back.
Yeah, a little
he's
bit.
He's like, man, you touched my chest that certain way and gave me money. I was just thinking if I could do you any favors.
I definitely had some of that vibe.
Tipped him well. He wanted to make sure he was taken care of, but not sexually. But I guess it could be sexually.
I brought you some
luck. It is a parking lot that you're hanging out in. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Especially with that early Kubrick rear projection going on there with that fucking, like, looking out across the... They were looking at a screen, right? Totally.
Yeah, you're talking about the racetrack?
Shit.
Where he's...
Yeah. And then I love the wide shot there. Where you actually see behind the car a little bit, but in the close-up rear projection where he has the gun, there's a fucking random tree that appears in the left side of the frame.
Yeah.
It's so bad. It feels like bad old TV at that point, you know? Yeah.
You think they were doing that just to fake the location, like the racetrack wasn't actually at the parking lot, and that's why they were doing it? Because, like, the parking lot's not rear screen projection. That's, like... It's a location they shot it at.
That's a location.
Yeah. So like, why did they do that for the reverse? Was like
maybe they wanted something to line up with the horses going around so that you could actually believe Because honestly, like until he is leaning across the hood of the car or whatever, like I was like, how many times are they going to go around the track? And, you know, they say it's the 1 mile race. And then you hear them like, all right, they're a quarter mile. Now they're at a half mile. I'm like, oh, okay. So this is his one chance to actually do that. So yeah. They had to have some level of like that lining up with the fucking horses. And if they were doing that for real, that sounds like a fucking nightmare.
I don't think that the track was right there. I think in the other shot, it's also projection.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like at some point they have to do something to, I mean, this movie had a ridiculously tiny budget, so they probably shot some of that stuff like separately while they were shooting the other things, you know what I mean? Like
they did that a few times. There's another projection shot where you show the side of the building, you know, where you have the window where they throw the bag out, but yeah. then that's a projection shot, and then they have a fence and a guard shack, and then the guy drives through with the cop to get into where that area is. That's all a projection shot too. A lot of that, but it worked.
Yeah, I like that one better. You know, that one looks good.
Right. The one with the gun is really bad.
Yeah, because the horses are out of focus in the wide shot, and you're like, the first time you're watching it, you're like, what the fuck is this dude looking at? That's not a racetrack. And it's not right, until it punches in and he brings the actual rifle up in the frame. You're like, oh, it is.
Oh, I see.
Thought I was just watching a black gray smudge.
I was confused.
Yeah, and when he pulls in, he's way overacting. When he pulls in with his car, and he's kind of like looking like big. He's like, oh, you know, like, you know, big movements.
Yeah, because there's nobody in the parking lot too. It's like, what are you looking at, bro?
And he's so close when he drives in and like parks. It's like he didn't go very deep into there at all. You're gonna fire a gun off and think that you're gonna get out of this area that has a guard shack?
Like, why did you pull in straight? No, why didn't you back in so you could like piece the out? You know,
bro, I would have had the car running and already backed out, and then like you know, shot from there, or you know, I don't know, got a rest on that tree and then ran over and got out. He just didn't really like seem to care to get out of there.
Well, like if we're gonna spend so much time with this character and with the guard character, like why did we not see a little bit more like concern from him when he's like hearing the announcer saying that they're lining up for this one thing, for the reason why he's there? Like he didn't even start freaking out until they were like about to start running. Like it seemed like he should have done that sooner.
Yeah, I don't know, man. This movie does have some like time and editing issues in it.
For as much as it seems to rely on the nonlinear story structure, which I'm sure was like super, super like brand new at the time, but it doesn't all work. And I don't know if that's just because some of the times and the voiceover stuff things are like weird, or if just,
well, it's because
some of it really does work. I don't know. Yeah.
You're staying with a character the entire time. Like, so you watch the beginning, middle, and end of their thing, and then we go to a different character, and then we're like further back in the day, you know, or earlier in the day.
Yeah.
And then we start going forward. It's like you're not, like in modern films, we would shoot all this stuff like that, but then we would cut it together where we're cutting back to the guy in the parking lot in the car. We're cutting back to the wrestler that's getting ready to throw the fight.
Yeah.
You know, like all of these things are going to happen at one time, and we're building suspense in tandem with these scenes together. And this one, it does kind of suck some of the suspense out by just being like, here's the beginning, middle, end. That's,
you got to rewind and go again. Like, it's kind of like when you cut back and you got, and they reset to where Johnny is going in and he's standing at the door and he goes in, you know, and we actually see the other side of that later, and they kind of rewind it and you have to remember what's happening. It's interesting the way they play some of those things.
Yeah. And that's where I'm like, all right, does this not work for me? Because I've seen like 1,000 iterations of it, because everyone has, you know, taken from this movie and done other better versions later. They've, you know, honed that. Or is it just because maybe this movie doesn't quite work as well as it wants to with that sort of nonlinear storytelling?
Can be both.
Sure. Are there other examples as early as this?
Oh, well, I think where Kubrick's probably getting it from is Rashomon. But that's different, though. That's literally like the same event that's being told three different times through a different character's perspective each time we're seeing it. And that's the whole movie. So you're like at a trial and it's like, okay, this person died and this woman got raped. What happened? And you hear the three different events.
Okay. Got it.
So that was kind of, I think that was probably the first version of
the last duel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That is definitely the modern equivalent. But this is the first film I can think of where like things are out of order in the middle of like a climax, you know?
Yeah, yeah, where you have some level of suspense, like you said, that builds up and then stops, and then this other guy has to get over there, and so we stick with him for some time.
I saw a lot of people referencing Pulp Fiction and Tarantino and Reservoir Dogs in this movie, but I just kept going back. I was like, man, I don't know. I think it feels more like Christopher Nolan.
I was going to say Christopher Nolan is all over this. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
What, because of that mask?
Well, not only because of that
because
mask,
of the Joker's exact mask that he lifted from this movie.
Which is a great mask.
It is a great mask.
It looks so good in this.
I thought it was great in this. I was actually surprised at how nice it was.
Yeah. Even though I don't think he'd be able to see very well out of it, but I love the small eyes.
I mean, he only needed it for like 2 minutes, so.
And I love how it kind of like moves when he's talking.
Yeah.
That
makes it look creepy.
That was neat.
It's a super great mask.
It looks really creepy, and I was like, why don't we, like, I feel like, why did we stop making masks like that? Like, we're just now getting back to that.
Yeah, that like rubbery type or the like the creepiness of it, which factor do
you
want?
Oh, like the way it like sticks to his skin and moves with his face, and like as he's talking, the mask is moving.
There's a lot more hockey mask style things, I think.
Yeah.
These days.
I mean, for a while, there's been more like, and the argument that I've always heard is that it's just easier to do, and people always go, oh, but it's creepier. It's just because it's easier, so they're making excuses. Yeah. But if they can do it in this film, then surely, like, what's the problem? I don't know.
Do you think it moved that well? Was it supposed to be a kid's mask? I'm just now thinking about this because it doesn't fit his face the best.
Right.
No,
it
doesn't
seem like it's intended to.
It doesn't. No, it's not intended to. And it might be a kid's mask. It doesn't fit. It looks like he just like popped it on and like let's go. But that being said, it's still really impressive the way it moves and looks.
And the hat looks good with it too.
Yeah, the hat does look good.
It does.
Yeah. I even like, oh yeah, that whole scene's great. I even like how he knocks on the fucking door to get it open. He's like pointing the gun at the door and then takes the butt of it and knocks on it down. Oh, it's so cool.
Dude, I like how he, like, John Wick military style, like, cocks it with his left hand when he pulls the gun out and he like, reaches around the backside and like, does it with his left hand. I'm like, ah, what a badass. You know?
It just conveys that he's handled it before. He knows what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah. He knows this weapon, you know, which is really, really great. And I love the lighting in there, too. It's got that super, like, awesome noir shadows when the super,
dude,
like you're seeing the angles.
So many shots in this, like, yeah. So many locations. I was like, look at all these gobos that they set up for some shit. Like,
dude,
it's
yeah.
fantastic.
Well, even in the scene where like Johnny and or is it Johnny, the girl who's talking about how she's, you know, talking too much. That scene is really interesting because they have like shears on the windows.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
they're flowing, but. They still have sharp edges on behind them, and they're wiggling like the
yeah
the like the reflection of the light is like moving with the shears behind them. It's really, really cool feeling.
Yeah, that was the moment when I recognized that it was a recurring thing that they were doing, because it was like when they go into that medium close up and you see it, just it's just like flat against that,
yeah.
that background with the shadows. I'm like, that looks pretty dope.
That's the classic like profile of the lovers.
Yeah,
you know, where she, yeah. where she's leaned her head back and looking up, and you've got that perfect. I was like, ah, this is great.
I bet it's good.
Burst yeah, profile.
Do what?
Profile, not silhouette. Profile.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, that was the moment when Kubrick was like, I'm going to make another movie with this motherfucker.
Talk about precious bodily fluids. That guy's got a great voice, though.
He does.
I forget what that actor's name
presence.
Is.
Sterling
Hayden.
Hayden Sterling something?
What? No, it's yeah, you're right. Sterling Hayden.
Sterling Hayden.
Okay, yeah.
He's got the delivery of the day, you know.
Yeah.
He's very acting of the time period.
I'm a man's man, sweetheart.
Yeah.
It's just he is cool. I'll give him that.
I'll take care of myself. That's my specialty.
Was not enthused about the goddamn narration though.
I was just about to ask, what do you think about that? A lot of times, especially
Wednesday,
this one, I was like, we don't need it.
11:22 a.m.
Yeah.
And? Like,
so, some of it's so fucking terrible. It's literally like, and four days later, so-and-so wakes up out of bed. Why is that fucking in VO? Like, I'm literally watching that right now.
And it feels like you're pandering to the audience a little bit when you can just kind of let these scenes play out. You don't really need to know the time jump. Or whatever, you know, just let the scene happen. We don't need this
again.
This
is where I wonder, like, if this style of editing was so completely brand new out of left field, no one had ever seen it before, that not having a story go in a linear fashion Maybe the studio was like, no, we need some kind of like, where the fuck are we? I'm so confused. Like, that sounds like a studio note. You know what I mean?
It does. It does. Especially since like all of Kubrick's films, like you watch those long tracking shots that he does with characters and they're just walking and we're just with them for a little bit. Like this movie has that, but it's got the fucking VO over top of it. It's just like, just cut that shit out. And this would feel more like a Kubrick movie instead of fucking goes into these areas where it feels like a 40s newsreel. It's like, what the fuck
it feels
are we
like
doing?
Bad TV.
Yeah, I thought they were
doing...
That's
a good way to describe it.
Yeah, I thought they were doing that on purpose and trying to, like, set the mood, and most of it wasn't necessary, but I thought that it still seemed like they were kind of doing it on purpose. Like, he was trying to lean into a genre that he shouldn't. Like, you know how before great artists, like, find their thing, they kind of dabble in other genres? It kind of seemed like that's what he was doing here. And I don't think in terms of the VO, like this was like, I thought it was a bad choice on his part. But you know, how are you going to find that out unless you do it, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Because I have seen, I mean, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Pushing Daisies that has VO that explains everything as you're
that's
watching
so
it.
That's so good, though.
Yeah, I know, but it's really good.
That's Jim motherfucking Dale.
It isn't that's a comedy
Jim
too,
Dale
right?
Killing that. Yeah.
Well, but still, I missed that show. They were trying to make this movie kind of lighthearted until the end. You know, I mean,
I didn't even think about Pushing Daisies. You're right. That's the best version of that. But that's more like storybook style. You know,
which I think he was playing around with the style here, and I don't think it works. But that's what I thought he was doing, was playing around and trying to kind of find his style. Because this was his first big hit, right? I mean...
Right.
Well, it wasn't a hit.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, his first big film then.
Yeah.
I thought it did okay. Did it not?
It had a budget of $320,000, $330,000. Don't know how much it made, but I did find it recorded a loss of $130,000.
Wow.
You know.
So it didn't make a lot of money. I would say somewhere around, like, you know, a little under $500,000.
Yeah, that's not great. Not for a movie that just took $2 million and threw it up in the air and said, bye.
Dude.
That was real money that they used for this.
That was real money? Weird looking money that they had in this, too. Maybe that's what money looked like, or that's just what TV money looks like. Like when he's shoving the money into the bag, into the suitcase out in the middle of the desert, wherever the hell he was.
I'm trying to remember it. I don't think I was paying any attention outside of just like, why?
It's like Monopoly money. It's got a giant five in the center of it, you know?
I didn't notice.
I thought that was the dollar sign.
But I do like the old man in the actual room during the heist who's... He just gets sick of fucking shoveling money. He's just like, fuck, man, it's not all going to fit. Just, yeah, it's just whatever.
Whatever.
He's
whatever.
Like, God damn it. Just
scoop it in. Just some of it lands here, on the man. Floor. Who cares? What is he going to do? Shoot me.
Well, I guess that's how everybody is with that, with the money. Like, yeah. Like, even when he's got the suitcase, there's like all those dollar bills around the suitcase.
He's like, who cares?
Even when he closes it up, yeah. How much does one man need? I guess he didn't know that at the time, though.
But my first viewing, I thought it was like, oh, man, were they showing that the stupid lock doesn't work and he's not even putting the key in the hole? And but, you know, that lends toward later when the thing pops open easily.
Oh, that's why that.
Oh, see, there you go. See, yeah.
I'm sorry. I was stuck on the fact that the entire culmination of this movie hinged on a person not knowing what the size a motherfucking carry-on bag is.
Well, like, he asked.
Surely.
No, he asked the guy.
He goes, if I bring one more bag, can I take it on the plane
with
me? He's
like, yes, you will. He doesn't give him a size, though.
Yeah, yeah, but like,
yeah,
but was it? But was like, legitimately, was a carry-on size just not a standardized, well-known thing in 1956?
Like, I would like
people
to think
been
that
flying for
not,
40 years. Like,
yeah, but not everybody, right?
Like, yeah, you know, but like I mean, like, there's got to be some amount of like common knowledge. Like,
he has to be comfortable with it because he came to check in his bags. Like, he has to have some knowledge of airplanes and how they work.
Right. He knew that he could check his bags in the morning and then come back later. Like, he was familiar enough with air travel that, oh, what the fuck? I can't take this giant fucking bag on the plane? Like, come on, dude. What?
He went to buy the bag specifically, too, and it says he went and bought the largest bag that he could find. When he went to go buy the bag, the guy didn't go, you know, like, hey, man, I'm going to take this on an airplane. What's the largest bag I can take on the airplane?
As soon as he walked out of that place with that fucking bag, I was like, oh, he's going on a road trip because that's a road trip bag. So when he takes it to the fucking airport, I was like, okay, what is happening here?
Yeah, it would have been better if, because like, you know, they used to let you carry as many bags as you wanted, not officially, but I have definitely carried like 5 bags on an airplane before. And Jesus, so like, Christ. It would be funny if he, you know, had all these bags instead of just one giant suitcase. It doesn't make any sense. And you could still kind of do that with the bags falling and the money leave. Like, you could still do everything exactly the same. But yeah, I thought it was crazy that he bought this giant bag and then insisted that he carry it.
Like, why? And
like,
why didn't he
say, where are you even going to
put it? right. Or why didn't he say, like, can I buy another seat on the plane?
Right.
Give me something from him, like, knowing a little bit more about how fucking air travel works with how much he already seems to know.
I did think it was really funny when they were like, okay, well, if you can't make it, then we'll give you a refund.
Oh, yeah, well, we'll just, you know, it's fine. We can
You're
get
right.
your bags off.
It's fine. We got you. Cool. Yeah. So I can take it out. No. We're going to give you your money back, motherfucker. Yeah.
I thought that was great.
That was great.
I don't understand. Why did he not just get in the fucking car at that point? He's going to Boston.
Right.
He's not even leaving the United States of America.
Yeah.
Like, you have the car right outside. Just be like, all right, never mind. I'll take my money back. That's gas money, bitches. And then peace out.
Yeah,
yeah,
for real.
Especially because they announced it. They think the money is still on site. Like, they're not looking for anybody yet.
Even though the cops were being very suspicious, standing next to the you know, the doors at the airport, just like looking at everybody, those two detectives.
They probably do that every night.
Yeah, they didn't blend at all.
Yeah, one of the shots, like, they panned over to him. I was like, who the fuck are these guys and why are we supposed to care?
Yeah, they were setting it up like we were supposed to know who they are. But obviously, they're detectives. They're wearing the garb. They got the hat and the coat.
Sure.
No,
sure,
I got that right away.
Sure.
And their hero shot at the end is badass. Them, like, walking toward the frame, you know? I was like, oh, yeah.
That's a great
the
end.
Killing.
Fucking great end.
It's perfect.
Doesn't make any difference.
Did heist movies used to always end with, like, the police winning? Like, when did we start making it?
Letting the criminals win?
Oh, I don't even know. Was that the first Ocean's 11, the one with the Brat Pack, Sinatra and the boys?
It was like early 60s, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of have to be, because when you have the production code, like, you can't commit crime and get away with it. That's like one of the rules. Like,
oh, okay.
So, was it really?
Yeah. Like, you always had to pay for crime. It's like, you know, you watch those old James Cagney movies. He, like, you know, he always dies at the end or gets arrested. Usually always dies.
In a blaze of glory.
Somebody saw White Heat. I'm on top of the world, Ma! Top of the world! What a great ending. When are we doing that movie? God, that's a good one, too. Fuck.
Is it a noir?
No, I wouldn't classify that as a noir. That would be a gangster movie.
Mm. All right, next month is gangster movies.
Gangster.
We can finally do The Godfather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can do Boys in the Hood.
That's so weird that I'm not available that week. What's
going on? Oh, speaking of The Godfather, did you guys see that new Megalopolis fucking trailer?
Yes.
Right? It's got like all these great quotes. We're like, nobody got The Godfather when it came out. Critics are all stupid. And it's got like these like piece of shit movie quotes. It has the person and the publication. You know those quotes aren't fucking real?
What?
Yeah, the news organizations can't find them. They're not in the actual reviews of the movie. So everyone's like, is this fucking made up? Did you guys fucking make this shit up? Like, there's like Roger Ebert,
like
Owen Gilberman. All these people are like fucking, some of these people are still alive. And they're like, that's not even in my review. What?
Yeah, but you said it. You said it.
I said it to your face, Francis. I didn't write it. This is an artistic piece of shit, Francis.
Francis is like, my memory is long.
You thought it. Oh, I think on that note, we're going to take a break. We're going to watch this trailer for Stanley Kubrick's The Killing.
Give or take a few thousand. I figure the loot on this deal at $2 million. There should be that much in the track offices. You like money. You got a great big dollar sign there where most women have a heart. So play it smart. Stay in character. You'll have money. Plenty of it. George will have it. He'll blow it all on you.
Johnny, I'm no good for anybody else. I'm not pretty and I'm not very smart, so please don't leave me alone anymore.
So what makes you think or know that you're going to have several $100,000?
Because I do. I just can't talk about it, that's all.
Not even to me, your little share.
I shouldn't have even mentioned I was going to have it. It's not that I mind. I know I can trust you. But if these other guys
the
ever...
other guys?
I can't talk about it, Cherry.
You've been talking. I just spilled to her.
Why, didn't honest. What do you think? I'm crazy? I wouldn't...
Jerk, you clown! Come on, clown. Sing us a chorus from Pagliacci.
Hey, where's the jerk? Where's George?
Right, we're back. That was a trailer for Stanley Kubrick's The Killing. You see why I didn't want you guys to watch that trailer before the movie? It shows
yeah,
you
it
everything.
Everything. Yeah, man, what the fuck is that?
This is who dies in the movie, guys. This is what's going to happen. This is how they're going to die.
Well, when you only really have one big, like, you know, moment, and they want to show some action in a trailer to get people to go see it, you know, I guess you got to show everything.
I guess. It's like, why even go to this movie? We know that everyone's going to die.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, they, you don't know how they die, you know?
What? They show
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we do. We see it on the screen.
No, they but get I'm sorry, shot. Why? Why they get shot, okay?
It's something probably to do with money, I would say, based off the trend.
Maybe.
Something to do with horses.
If only that guy would trust his wife, I think that's the takeaway that I got
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
They did have the newsreel thing that you were talking about earlier, Kristen. Like, that was part of all the graphics that were popping up. Felt very newsreel-ish.
Yeah.
So maybe that was a conscious choice, I guess is what I'm saying.
Suspense! Yeah, I don't know.
Suspense, terror, all the things that you're seeing right now. Help, police.
And horse murder. Racing. That reminded me, that shot of them tracking the horses running is really great, but most of the horse stuff is terrible. Like, all the stuff at the track is absolutely trash.
Yeah, the one super long dolly shot where it's like running next to them
is
fucking incredible.
Speed.
Incredible.
I don't know how they got it. It was this is wild. But the rest of it is all repeated B-roll.
Several times. Many
handheld,
times.
Shaky,
yeah,
bad. Not the same as the rest of the movie. It has to be stock footage.
I liked the helicopter shot where you can see the race from overhead. That was cool. I like that one. But you're right. Most of them are underexposed and
just bad.
Yeah.
Because everything else is 100% a set.
Yeah.
Like, I love all the matte paintings and stuff and the little whatever outside the windows and the choice of frosting the glass at the lower portion where you're actually looking, but above when we actually see out, we see a city. So it kind of like helps the illusion that we're not in a set. There's some really great stuff.
I mean, this was shot on, a lot of the exteriors are, you know, shot on location. Which is, I don't know, it's kind of crazy. That's not how Kubrick usually works. He's like, we're going to shoot everything in England. We got a Vietnam movie?
That's when he got more power. Yeah.
We're going to set it in England. Bring those banana trees. Plant them. Crazy guy. I also found a really funny fucking quote. I found it on Wikipedia. And I was just like, who the fuck is this guy? But this is fucking, supposedly Stanley Kubrick said this. He was talking about him and his producer partner. I think it was Jack Harris. He says, we want to make good movies and make them cheap. The two are not incompatible. What the fuck?
Stanley Kubrick said that?
Right?
I think he was high. You know, that wasn't normally. That's not his real feelings there.
Good movies that are cheap.
I don't think any of his movies have ever been cheap.
No.
He didn't work with that producer after Lolita. So, you know, that may have something to do with it. It's like, I need some real budgets.
I need real money. I need to be able to shoot for like years.
Jesus.
He was only, like, what, 28 when he made this? 27, something like that? So
yeah.
Yeah, and he had a lot of issues with his... Because didn't he want to shoot it? And they told him no. And so he hired this like, I don't know, famous cinematographer for the time. And they fought the whole time.
There's, like, some really good story where, like, I don't... Stanley Kubrick wanted, like, some close-up on, like, a 20-millimeter lens or something like that. And... I guess when Stanley Kubrick stepped away from the camera and went to go talk to the actors, the DP put a 50 on it and moved the camera further back. And then Kubrick came back and was like, "What the fuck is this shit?" And the DP was like, "Well, you don't shoot a fucking close-up on a 22, and who would do that? That's a wide-angle lens. Their faces are going to be stretched." Ah. But, you know, conventions at the time, the cinematographer was correct. Like, that's not how we made movies. But, you know, that's also not how you grow and experiment, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but those shots like that look really cool. I love wide-angle lenses up close.
They look really cool because they are still slightly unconventional because there's been so much time leaning more towards the DP's perspective and that this movie tried to do. But it's one of those things that can be very easily overused. Like, if you don't have aesthetics and taste, like, you can spend the entire time with a Dutch cam angle, but it doesn't make it appropriate for your fucking Battlefield Earth movie, you know what I mean?
Oh my god, fuck. Please, can we have an eye level shot? Just fucking keep it straight in that movie. Fuck. I forgot about that, Greg.
It's a Battlefield, guys.
Never watching it's that movie again. Never.
No. Watching it and it once in the first place was too much. But as an example of like directors trying things that don't understand like the conventions and why you use them or why you break them is why I think it's interesting to watch Stanley Kubrick in his early career, because like he has established so many things that I think we consider conventions these days, that to see him trying some of that early stuff is kind of interesting.
Yeah, you can see the growth there.
I didn't expect to see that much of it, you know what I mean? Like, but there's a lot of like, oh yeah, there it is. Okay, oh yeah, there it is. Like those long dolly shots, and the scenes just like sitting on one take until like fucking shit happens, and then we cut to a medium shot. Like, oh my god, why is this a big deal? We just cut. Finally,
he did do some things that were like, I don't know, very conventional for film noirs. Like when Joe's got George's wife. And he's talking to her on the bed after he found her looking through the keyhole. You know, it's shot pretty normal. And then they, at the very end of the scene, I think it may be the last shot in the scene, where they start shooting through the bars in the bed. And we're seeing his close-up. And we don't even see the actress's face. We're just seeing, like, pieces of the side of her head, you know? Barely even see her nose. It's so cool. We're doing that gel bar framing. I love that shit.
Yeah, that's kind of like when George is first talking to his wife, and you have that like ominous, like he's just standing there with his drink, and like that beautiful like medium close up of her just laying on the bed, and all we see is George's drink.
I did notice. You guys notice they were fucking with the heights of fucking lamps and like constantly in the movie. Yeah, there's like it's in the robbery scene is when I first noticed it, right before Johnny goes and puts the clown mask on as he's walking in to like the locker room area.
Oh, he almost with the hanging lights.
Yeah. He almost hits his head on the fucking lamp.
The China hats, as it were. Yeah. They are really low and really weird. I thought the same thing. I was like, what the fuck, man? You're just going to be bumping your head on this all the time.
Yeah.
Do you mean like they were fucking with him, like they were changing him from scene to scene, or just the fact that they were low?
It's
in
just
the first
they were
place?
Really low. And I just thought they were really low in the scenes.
Yeah.
Too, because they look cool.
Yeah.
And like all the table lamps are raised up a lot. Yeah. So,
oh shit. Well, when the girl goes to her boyfriend's house, when Sherry goes over to her boyfriend's house, she's like leaning on a lamp. She's got her hands all down in the lamp.
Dude.
I'm like, what is this?
That was the moment where I was like, oh yeah, no, here we had the
like
quintessential like
lamps.
Under light, like let's establish that they're like both like
leaning against
menacing
the lamp
and stuff. But then when she puts her fucking hand on the lamp and like creates
it felt
shadow,
like that was a directing thing. Yeah, like, now stick your hand in the lamp, you know.
And that's when your faces will be covered with shadow because your plan will be coming to more fruition. We'll be talking about how you're blah 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 blah. And I was like, okay, I thought I was gonna like this, and then I didn't. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
I do like in that scene where, like, right before they go over to the lamp, the actress gets her hair caught on something that's on the mantle.
Oh, yeah.
And she gets ready to move.
Hanging there.
And her like, hair stays. Yeah. It was cracking me up. I was like, man, I bet you Stanley Kubrick, that drove him fucking insane. He's like, God, that's the only take we have.
It's also like when the guy pulls the gun up and he doesn't know what to do with the strap on the gun. He's like, ugh. There's just like that feels all awkward. There's a couple little things. It seems like, well, we didn't have a second take of that.
What? No, no, not when we have, not when it's fucking 4 minute like single take master shit, because he sits on those things for a long time. Specifically that one where she gets her hair stuck. I was like, yeah, I bet they were just like, I'd rather have the beginning and the end, and I don't really care about this thing in the middle. It's too bad we don't have one that's better for the whole thing, but like, I don't really want to cut away from it, so we're just going to let it live.
We don't really have playback, though, so if the operator didn't call it out, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, well, they could have had, like, 15 takes of it, but if he liked enough parts of the around it and he wanted it to be one shot, like, sometimes you just let that shit that happens happen.
But because it's Stanley Kubrick, it really sticks out. Because, yeah, he's known for doing a couple of takes.
Yeah, like 300 or 400.
Yeah, but this is when he was trying to make cheap movies, apparently. So
that's true. That's true.
Well, this one had
four angles. Move on.
Yeah, but this one had a lot of angles on that awesome wrestling scene in the middle. What'd you guys think about that? Dude just totally rips his shirt off. It starts spinning people around.
It was so cheesy. I'm sorry. It was so cheesy.
That's entertainment, man. That's exciting.
He was like, raw.
He was a big hairy wrestler. Okay.
It was great. I liked it.
And it took eight guys to like wrestle him out, and he's like just like boopity off to see the wizard.
Yeah, he gets smacked in the head with a glass bottle, and is like, whatever.
You're trying to do what to me now? Okay.
That was pretty fucking awesome. I love the bartender's face too. Like after he smashes the bottle over it, and the dude stops for a second, and then turns around, and the guy's like, "Oh shit!" And then just throws him off the bar. That was good. But I could not understand anything that guy was saying. I had to watch it with fucking subtitles, man.
His little monologue at the chess club?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Fuck,
dude.
All of it.
Dude, there was so much dialogue in this movie that just was superfluous. Like
it's
half
flowery
of it is
of the time,
half
yeah.
of it feels like they're like, you really need to know everything that I'm saying right now, and half of it was like, I'm continuing to talk because we just need more time to be filled. And it was like, I was struggling to maintain focus and figure out when I actually needed to pay attention. And for the most part, I don't feel like I missed a single thing.
I don't know. That chess club part, I guess.
What was important in that? What did they say that you were like, oh, that was critical to the plot, that if I didn't know that, I would have missed something?
Well, I think they're setting up a bunch of things.
He's a badass.
Well, he's talking about like society and how you have to conform in society or they'll eat you. Like, what was it? Celebrities and mobsters. Like, we want to see them be successful, but we all really just are waiting for them to fail. We want to see that. Johnny's character is the individual, right? And he's not conforming to society. It does add a little bit to his character. And I also like that, you know, the wrestler guy, the who you would think it would be like the biggest idiot in the world, is like, you know, Johnny, you're not very smart, which, you know, helps at the end when he just makes fuck up after fuck up right at the airport. It's just like, God damn, you are not very smart, bro.
He has his strengths lie in other areas, okay?
Well, okay, for the guy that's supposed to have planned this whole fucking thing to not, like, I don't know, put a goddamn strap around your suitcase or something, like, without knowing, like, I think that's where the movie kind of falls apart for me.
A single belt would have solved it all.
Yep. Like, why didn't he take his belt off and, like, strap that motherfucker down? Like, ain't nobody touching this and nobody getting in it, you know.
Somebody
Johnny, your pants will fall down. He's like, yeah, but I got a trouble with this bag.
But that money blown away at the end is a fucking super cool shot. I love that.
It is really great. And I love how a lot of it just sits for a minute, you know, and then just all go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really good.
I think that's the most suspenseful part, because you're like, does he have time to go grab some, or like, is it just because like you sit there and you watch it and it's like sitting there and it's like, you could though, maybe you could get some, but then it all flies away.
I'm surprised you don't see like people that were standing there waiting for the plane to
the same thing. Yeah. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, dude,
it's just money. What?
If that dog can run out there, they could definitely run out there.
Dude, when that fucking dog comes back, she's like, good job. Like, wait, what just happened? Good job? Good job. Good job the dog came back. Good job the dog did that thing in the first place. What's happening?
It was an act of God, you know.
I guess.
He has to be punished.
That's why American is not responsible for it.
He didn't get the bag insurance. If you got the luggage insurance, it wouldn't be a problem.
Oh, shit, what's in there? Nothing.
$2 million.
just personal effects. Like, buddy, calm down. You're looking very suspicious here.
Yeah, right, right. Yelling at the manager like a fucking Karen, and then he's like, there's nothing in there. It's fine. It's nothing.
Oh, there was another cool part in the movie where I had to rewind it a couple times, man, and when I went frame by frame, it was breaking my brain even more. But it's like right before George's wife. It's like when they're making their plan. They're in the back of the room. You don't really know where they are, but they're in a dark lit room and they're going over their plan. They hear a noise at the door. Two of the guys go up and investigate it. It turns out to be George's wife. But the guys in the back room slowly get up and they walk from the back room to the front door. And it's this long dolly shot.
Yeah, it's great.
Right? And, on my print, it looks like there is a cut.
There's a motherfucking cut, because I saw it too. And I was like, that was a cut right there. Was there a cut right there? And she said, yeah, there was a cut right there. And I rewound it and I was like, there's a fucking cut right there.
Man, I went frame by frame and I can't see the fucking cut. There is a camera bobble, but there is not, I don't think there's a fucking cut there.
And if it feels like there's a cut.
It feels like it, but man, I went frame by fucking frame and you can see like the back half of the dudes and like the front half of the next room of the set, and the camera does this little shift where they're like, I guess they're like panning to get the actor or something. Like they're too far ahead of him, so they like pan a little, and I think that makes it look like a cut. But man, I could not actually see like where the room changed. Where is the moment where like this shot ends and the next one begins? Could not find it.
Yeah, but there's still a really cool shot. Now at the end, there's a jump cut of what it's they're like in a crowd outside the door, and it's the same framing, but there's a jump cut between takes.
I also saw that.
Yeah, I can't remember where the fuck that was though.
I don't remember where it was either. I just remember being like, there was another jump cut. Wait, it solidified for me that the hallway
that first
dolly
one was a fucking
also,
cut. Yeah, I had the same thought.
Yeah, no, that was just breaking my fucking brain. But yeah, you watch it back normal speed, it totally looks like they're cut there. But frame by frame, could not find it. Kristen, you're being awful quiet about those costumes and other stuff.
I did like the costumes. And the makeup also, I'll mention that so I don't forget. But the costumes I thought were really great. And with the one exception being that I thought he leaned a little bit too much into the stereotypes. You know, the evil woman is wearing the sexy clothing and the good women are wearing the modest clothing.
That being said,
they did look good.
This is fair.
I liked the choices. Not that choice. You know, evil is attractive and good is not. That I don't. You know, but you know, like what's the evil lady's name? It's not Faye. Faye's the good one, right?
What is her name? Shirley or something like that? Or
Sherry?
Someone's
Sherry. Sherry. Right?
Sherry. Yeah.
The good girl is Sherry.
Oh, Faye's the
bad
one? No, I thought
the bad girl was Sherry.
No, Sherry's the bad one. That's George's wife. Yeah. Yeah.
So okay. Sherry has, like, she's wearing, like, this robe that I thought was absolutely stunning. And then at the end, when she's wearing her sexy black underwear, this is another example of sexy black underwear. Loved that. It's just, like, so normal for her. She's just walking around and, like, what looked like a little corset. It might not be a corset. It might be like a bustier, but still. She's just walking around, just getting ready. Just thought it was really cute. But also, she's evil, so you shouldn't wear clothes that make you look good. So,
and it's then that temptress that she's going
to
be.
Exactly, exactly.
She has a bail.
And the makeup I appreciated also because... because you can't really do blood, and so half the time when you get shot, you're like, wait, what, did they just get shot? Why did they just fall over like that, like so dramatically? Yeah. But then they had like holes in their faces, and I was like, oh, that looks kind of neat. I kind of like that.
Yeah,
that stuff was pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
Did you not like it, Jared?
No, I thought it was great, but her saying that reminded me of the targets that they were shooting when they went out to test the gun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Those were not bullet holes, man. Those were like hole punches all through those targets. It's like the most ridiculous. I was like, that is not what that would look like.
Yeah, I don't know that it was necessarily representative of a good bullet wound, But I did like they were holes and in someone's face, and I thought,
yeah,
that was really cool.
It's, and you could see the three-dimensionality of it, which exactly. is like pretty cool.
I thought it was pretty cool, and it almost made it look more terrifying. Like when you have stuff now, like it's just like, you know, blood gushes everywhere, and it's just gory, and it's just like, that's cool too. But I think it's kind of creepier to have like holes, like you're just like someone turns around and all of a sudden they have a hole in their face. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I kind of liked it. Also, did we talk about how ridiculous everyone dying in this movie was, especially the dude in the car? Like, at first I thought he stood up just so he could fall out, and then I realized that he got shot somewhere in there. But still, that was so ridiculous.
You know, it's older film death. You know, you gotta grab. Oh, you gotta grab the part you got hit at, and then big fall.
Yeah, I know it was standard. I just
that damn horseshoe.
It was a little funny.
That damn horseshoe that somehow got stuck in his tire. Like, why do we have an insert of that? Like,
did someone tell a story one time? Is like, man, this one time I fucking ran over a horseshoe and it popped my tire. Because, like,
yeah,
who comes up with
the fucking weird? Like, what?
Why did the guy have to bring a horseshoe? I brought you some luck. Like, okay,
yeah, it was good luck. People used to have horseshoes.
Yeah, I mean, isn't a horseshoe like one of the marshmallows you eat in fucking Lucky Charms, Jared? Come on,
it is.
There you go.
But who? Who's giving them out, you know?
I have been given multiple horseshoes in my life.
Have you?
Yes.
What kind of dudes are trying to date you?
Ranchers
from
Montana.
This is when I was a child. Thank you.
Hey, girl, let me pop that tire.
No one in recent years has given me a horseshoe, and maybe that's the problem, okay?
Hey, girl, are you lucky enough to have a guy like me? Oh, well, here, let me give you a horseshoe.
Maybe this will help.
Did you guys never play, like, horseshoes as children, where you, like, throw the horseshoe?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, you just took him with you after
I don't know that I ever would, actually. Because I could always throw it and hit the nail or whatever it is that you're supposed to. But then it would like go flying off. It would go flying off. It wouldn't stay around there.
Oh, so. You were one of those.
I love
people.
When you do the spin.
Too strong for your own good.
Hell yeah.
I can't help it.
You know what they always say? Close is always is
horseshoes and hand grenades.
Horseshoes and hand grenades. Yeah, it's close enough.
Feels like an apt description of this movie. It's close enough.
Yeah, that's good. It's good. It's close enough. Yeah.
Actually, you know,
it's like Kubrick. It's close enough.
Yeah, you know, it has his name on it. Yeah, so.
It's Kubrick adjacent.
Yeah. You know, I did appreciate the short runtime, though. I will say that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Oh, come
on,
Mike.
I'm going to gripe about it, motherfucker. I'm sorry. I was like, 100, an hour 24. Perfect. It's going to be short. It's going to be sweet. This movie fucking drags in several parts. Like, I'm sorry, it does.
It does. I actually was excited also about the runtime, but it does not feel like an hour 24 movie. It feels like
at least 45.
Yeah, it feels like a good 2-hour film, because I think at one point I paused it, and I was like, did I, like, misread the runtime? Like, was
that
actually,
trailer that
the trailer was a minute 24? Like, is that what I saw?
I don't know. I didn't have a problem with the runtime. I thought it was all right.
What? Not the runtime, but like the runtime
pace.
You call the runtime based on pace, right?
Yeah.
Like, are there parts for you, Brian, that you're like, all right, we didn't need that much repetition in when we're like cutting around the things and showing where it happened, or
I don't know.
Did it drag for you at all?
Yeah, no, I didn't feel like the scenes like were overextended. Like, if anything, like I thought it was really quick, especially for a Kubrick film, but.
Well, maybe that's probably the baseline that we're not talking about.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like all of these scenes are tighter and quicker and get to the point faster than, like, any scene in The Shining, you know?
Oh, totally absolutely. True. Absolutely, yeah. If there's one thing that I feel like I consistently get frustrated with Kubrick is how long he just wants to fucking sit there. All right, I know that you try to break your actors down by doing 100 takes to finally get like an authentic reaction. Are you doing that with me as well as the for
break the audience?
Like,
bro. Yeah.
Jesus, yeah, I just gotta sit here for 4 minutes before anything
you're
fucking
love
like,
this.
Moves.
You're
on
gonna
the
watch
screen.
This
like,
horse ride on the ground because it's been shot.
I didn't feel that in this movie except for a few moments. I want to say like when. Right before Act 3, like the end of Act 2, like when they're the whole fucking scene with the bartender dude and his wife, I was just like, oh my God, like we fucking get it, move on. Like they're praying together and shit. Like I didn't need any of that. Like There's a bunch of guys, and boom, 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 boom. Like, let's just move the fuck on.
You're right, Jared. They may not be coming home. I know that because the VO told me.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And then we have a whole fucking conversation between them about it. Like, oh my God. Cool.
Wait, did the VO say this may be his last day?
Yes.
That's weird. Mm. Why are we saying that to the audience? Hey, guys, we don't know what's going to... You're the fucking whole instrument narrator. You don't know what the fuck is happening. What are we doing?
Setting up expectation.
I do think it's interesting how they do just kind of stay within the scenes. Because you're right, Mike, they don't really need to be in there. But they do make for well-rounded characters. Well, that's a bit of a stretch. But they make
that's
for
what they're attempting to
more,
do.
They yeah. make them more human than they were initially. Yeah, that's what they're attempting to do. I mean, if they hadn't sat, like he could have just given us a really quick scene, for example, with Sherry and her husband. And you just would have been like, wow, she's a fucking bitch. Which she is. But they stayed on it for so long, and you hear their conversation, and you hear her talk about how unhappy she is. And you just the same way you hear him like begging her, like, can you just love me and forget that, you know, I haven't like done anything I said I would. And so at that point you're kind of like, okay, maybe these people are just miserable and deserve each other. And so like it kind of, again, you know, it's sort of an interesting exercise in where he will eventually end up, I think. And I can actually see now that I'm talking about it, how this influenced Tarantino, because I hear so many people say the same thing about, especially Pulp Fiction, and how they just want to cut all of those. There's so many scenes in Pulp Fiction they want to cut, and it's usually all of the scenes with the women, and especially the French woman, and when she's talking about her belly. That's the most hated scene in that movie for some reason. But no, I can see how they influence each other, and why it's important, and I don't know that it really is pulled off in this movie, though. I don't feel that, especially because you kill everyone at the end. I don't know.
Well, okay, for me, like, I actually really enjoyed the stuff with George and his wife, like, because that felt like it was actually moving the plot forward. Like, that was moving the story forward. Like, clearly we're sitting with this woman because she's going to have some kind of interaction later that matters. When we go to the bartender's house and we sit with like his sick dying wife of some variety, that we don't get actual exposition when we have so much fucking other exposition. Like, why are we there so long? Yeah. Like, he's clearly just like an extra character there for them to be like, it's a bigger gang. Cool. Well, give me two or three of those guys and give me two or three quick moments of like other people, other people, other people, other people. We get it. Why are we fucking sitting there for so long besides to just make the audience be like, oh, some of them are doing it for good reasons. His wife is sick. That's why he's a good robber. What the fuck are we doing?
That's backstory. That's character. You know,
who fucking cares?
We got to make you care, bro. No, we're trying to make you care about these.
Okay,
these
characters. That's the point of it. They're fucking failing because I did not give a shit about his dying wife. And like,
if you were
like,
1956, you would have. You'd been like, oh, his poor wife.
No, when they showed his dying wife, I like literally rolled my eyes because it's just such a cliche.
Yes, exactly.
It feels like a cliche now, though. What is
no.
it a cliche then?
I think it was a cliche then, too.
Yeah, it felt like it was a cliche then. It felt like they were like, you know what this person is. Here we go.
I mean, they have so many characters. I'm kind of okay with one character having the dying wife. Like, what do you got? The cop with the gambling problem?
Right, yeah.
And he's also
a drinking problem. Yeah. If the chief knows where I was, then the chief knows where I was, you know, so that's where I'll be.
Yeah, I mean, I guess all those are cliches now, but I mean, like, I don't know. I didn't have a problem. We don't spend enough time with them. Like,
but that's where we disagree. I think we spend too much time with them.
What? It's like three minutes of the whole movie, maybe.
For a movie that is an hour 24, it fucking drags in those guys.
I don't know. I was okay with it. I was also waiting for them to like tell me like, what the fuck is wrong with the woman? Why is she in the bed? Why is she not eating the breakfast? And
you have too much time for there for expecting me to care without telling me why I should care.
I did think they were gonna get around to that, and that was, it's kind of dropped. There are some things that are like a little loose in it. Like, it's just like, you know, I don't know, like Johnny's buddy that's helping him finance the race, his whole, I don't know why that character's in the movie. They don't do anything with it. The old man that Johnny is like getting the room from, and he's giving him the money to hire the.
Doesn't he
thugs.
Start the fucking movie? Isn't he the one that passes around the little like?
Yeah,
here's the address thing.
I didn't understand why he was there. I didn't understand like what he was talking about with Johnny. Like, oh, let's go see the world together and go traveling. And it's like, bro, where the fuck is this coming from?
He was in love with him, bro.
I guess. And then he shows up at the heist drunk.
Yeah, he's trash. He never drinks anymore.
Yeah.
Because at the beginning he says, ah, oh, ginger ale for me, you know.
He's sad because his little lover boy is leaving.
Yeah, obviously.
But they don't do anything with it. Like, if you're going to set that up, like, all these other problems that we have, they all come back to haunt us, like, in some way. But, like, that's just dropped. Like, it was like something was cut out of the movie or something. It's like, okay, he showed up. What is the bad thing now that he's at the track? Like, there should be something that's done with that. Otherwise,
someone should have recognized him or done something, you know?
Yeah.
Besides the people that we know, it should have been somebody else there. But like, oh, hey, I know you were drinking again.
But they don't use any of that to create any tension or anything. And it's just like, why? No. Why is this here? Like,
it's just there.
You don't need him there. You just say Johnny, like, got some money. Okay. Or, you know what? Like, that's why he's with his girl. His girl, like, was working for 5 years. And he's like, ha, I'm now going to take your 5 years of babysitting and sewing money and spend it on a crime. Because you're not beautiful and we know you're not smart. Because you told us.
Yeah, that would have done a lot more for the same thing. And then, yeah.
But no, I like seeing all the everybody else's, like, backstory. And, you know, it's so quick. The cop kind of gets shortchanged. But I guess you see everything you need to, right?
Yeah, he's got the scene with the bookie, the guy, and he's like, you know, he needs his $3,000 by in the next 2 weeks, and he's got all that going on.
The nicest you need. Bookie in the world.
He's like, yeah, man, we'll just add an extra $400 on there. That's how things go, right? You know how this goes. Yeah. We'll have that in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't skip out on you. Well, I'm glad. That saves me the time of having to point that out to you. Thank you. It's like, holy shit, bro, could you be any more chill? Maybe the reason you don't get paid is because you're not threatening enough.
It's because he creates a safe space.
Anybody got anything else, or are we at ratings?
One thing I really had was that nobody really cared that a horse was shot. It just seems to happen, and they move on.
It's not manslaughter. It's, we don't know what it is. You might get away scot-free.
Well, it's killing a horse out of season. I guess there was a horse season back then.
I don't think there was. I think it was a joke.
I don't think there was.
That was just a joke? Okay.
Yeah. Based on his understanding of American Airlines flight policy. Of baggage.
Oh, did anyone else, before we get to ratings, did anyone else, like, it was like a jump scare when he said the N-word to the driver. He was like, just get
Dude,
out of here. And
yes.
I was like, whoa.
Yes. Yes.
What the
Absolutely. Hell? Actually, yeah. Hang on. Whoa.
It even like took the guy by surprise. He's like, holy shit.
Yeah, I think
came out of nowhere.
It was like, what are you doing? Yeah. All right. Just
check. Yeah, that felt like the reaction that Quentin Tarantino always thinks he gets. And
yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. Who's going first? Who's rating The Killing? All right. Everybody's being real quiet. So I guess I'm going to go. I'm going to give it an 8. Whatever. It's like, what is this? 84 minutes? What is there to complain about? It's suspenseful. I guess it's disappointing because it's Stanley Kubrick, right? I mean, like, you just expect so much and you're like, man, you know, this guy, when he was first starting out, he saw the world different. No, Stanley Kubrick saw the world just like we all did, and he learned, how to be different and how to shoot things cool and explore and experiment. And I don't know. That's really cool to see. Like, I do enjoy watching this movie being like, this, you know, this is what a Joe Schmo would have made with the story. And, but you can still see like these little nuggets of gold in here. That's like, okay, this is going to be the auteur that we all know, but, it doesn't quite get there. Some of the storylines fall flat. I think we've talked about those. And I don't know, enough of it works. And the end is so strong. Like, oh, those guys coming out. Like, it does leave you with a really good last shot. It does bring the emotion sometimes. It's just not all the time. And unfortunately, like, watching it today, after we've seen how many fucking heist films have been released? Like, yeah. Dear God, you know?
Yeah.
This just doesn't... It doesn't hold up to stuff that's even been released, like, you know, within the last 20 years. And, you know, part of that is it's been ripped off itself. So, I don't, what are you going to do? You're gonna knock the movie for that? I don't know. That's a hard one. I'm going to go with no.
Seems like you're knocking it 2 points, man. Come on.
I think I'm knocking the 2 points for, like, the unfinished narratives and, like... I was disappointed with the script a little bit in this one. You know, and yeah. Also the narration, we're losing a point for that fucking narration. That shit is terrible.
Dude, yeah, it is. But you know, it's of its time, though, Brian.
No,
you know?
Jared, it's not of its time because the Maltese Falcon came out in 1941 in the era of fucking newsreels. And where the fuck is the VO in that? Not present. Bad choice. Bad choice. Bad Stanley Kubrick. Bad.
Yeah. I was looking forward to watching this one, and I haven't seen... all of the Stanley Kubrick movies, so it was cool to jump into something that I definitely hadn't seen. And you're right, you get some of his flair, but you know, overall it just feels pretty standard. You know, it's very, but like, yet again, it's the jumping off point for a lot of heist films, so everything leans back to this. Hell, even that little shot at the end where we like pan over all the bodies and stuff, and it's like that, like, very POV, I had a flash of a Taxi Driver in my head. You know.
Oh, all right, good. Yeah, that's a good callback.
Hmm. Yeah, so I was like, okay, cool, you know? I'm really glad that we watched it, and I'm really glad that it has brought us into Noir Month, and I'm kind of agreeing with that. But I'm going to have to disagree with your rating, though, Brian. Because of the Kubrickian rating accord of 1999, all Kubrick films have to be rated a 10. So
that's it. We're doing the Fear and Desire right next, so you can see what a 2 looks like.
God damn it! No.
And I'm gonna send that out for each of you to assign afterwards. And Brian, we can probably redact your 8 and get that up to code by the end of the posting of this podcast. But yes, I will relinquish my time. There you go.
On principle, I don't rate anything a 10. Just because you're supposed to rate it a fucking 10.
The Kubrickian rating accord of 1999 states that every Kubrick film has to be a 10.
All right, real fucking talk, since you're bringing it up. I was really interested to watch this as like a, all right, let's see why I should think that Kubrick is this fucking auteur that everybody thinks is so goddamn perfect, because most of the time, most of his movies feel very fucking detached. Very dispassionate, and like sometimes that works for the stories that he chooses, but it doesn't always. And personally, as an audience member, it's not my jam. So I am interested and intrigued by why people connect so much with Kubrick and feel like he's this fucking brilliant master genius. I think he pulls off a lot of shit that is really, really, really well executed craft, but I just find it interesting that I don't always connect with his stories. So this movie is, for the most part, more entertaining than most of these other ones that I've seen. I found it like more enjoyable to watch overall. But there was a lot lacking for me. Like there was a lot. It felt like he was leaning too much on cliches, conventions of the time that I didn't. I felt the conventions of the time as like shortcuts because of the budget, because of maybe time choices. I didn't feel them that they were in there for the sake of like, I'm going to give you this thing that we all know and expect, and then I'm going to do something different with it. I didn't see much of that. The Kubrickian parts that I noticed were, like I kind of mentioned in some of the dialogue between the male and female characters, like with George and his wife, with what's his name and the girl who thinks she's not pretty. Like that's where I kind of saw some of Kubrick's shit, where he lets the two-hander scenes play out for like a really, really long time on those master shots, and then when he's really trying to punctuate something, that's when he finally fucking cuts. I really liked like his dolly moves and stuff, where like you see the one fucking shot of the horses running down the track, and it's like 20 seconds of just right there in this like crazy long, like 200 plus like lens. And it's just right there on them. I'm like, how did you guys even fucking do that? Like, is that a truck? Like, is that, did you have just have like 400 yards of dolly track? Like, how'd you get up to speed fast enough? How did you slow down at the end and not run off the fucking track? But you still have that like perfect. It's a great shot. Like, so there are some fun things that they actually accomplished in this movie that I think even for nowadays is still pretty interesting. But for the most part, I see Kubrick at the beginning of his career. I see him trying things out. I think Kristen has made some really great points of him experimenting and seeing what doesn't work. And, you know, if you're going to become an auteur that is beloved by nerds galore, you might have to try some things that don't quite work. And I like that we get to experience that, you know, 70 fucking years later. Power to the people trying new things that may or may not work. I think this movie, as an entertainment experience, I want to give it a 9. As an actual movie going experience, it's really going to be like a 7.5 for me.
7.5. All right. Kristen, what say ye?
Well, I think it's interesting because speaking of being at the beginning of your career and trying new things, if I had just seen this movie and this was like someone's first release and it failed, I would be like, yeah, because I can see why it failed and I can see why audiences didn't connect. And I actually think it's super interesting because I think at this point is where most people would be like, oh, maybe this isn't for me. And I think it's interesting that he kept going and developed into, because just from watching this, I would never have thought that he would develop into who he became. And I think that is actually this movie is really important to believing in yourself and just to keep going. Because I don't think this is that great. But I mean, it is entertaining. It is entertaining. I like certain parts of it, but like, I mean, especially the writing is not good. And that's not just the voiceover. That's a lot of the dialogue. That's a lot of the monologues even. That's, you know, it's fun. This can be a fun movie, but there's just a lot here that I think does not make this a great movie. Okay. But that doesn't mean, I actually would hold this up as like, you know, you can fail spectacularly and keep going and become a huge success. If you can fail this big, then you can also succeed this big. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So all of that being said, I did enjoy it, but it's actually, I think, very disappointing, especially when you look at other films of the time. And so I'm going to rate it harshly on that. And I'm going to give it a 6. Maybe I can give it a 6.5 on account of Jared's laws about rating. I'll give it an extra half a point. Because I think when you compare it to movies at the time, it's not great. I think it's fun. I think there's potential here. And obviously people, I say potential because so many people can draw from this and make amazing movies. This is not an amazing movie. This is a fun movie. This has really cool stuff in it. But this is not an amazing movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, according to Rotten Tomatoes, though, it's an expertly crafted noir.
When was that written?
Hold on.
2 years ago.
An expertly crafted noir with more on its mind than stylishly staged violence. The Killing establishes Stanley Kubrick as a filmmaker of uncommon vision and control.
Really?
Rotten Tomatoes brings in The Killing. Excuse me, Stanley Kubrick's The Killing. As fresh, with a 96% tomato meter and a 92% popcorn meter. That's what they're calling it now.
Wow.
The audience score is the popcorn meter.
I still would like to know when those were written.
Yeah, that is like Stanley Kubrick's already big. We're already sucking his dick and everything else.
Exactly. No. The tomato meter is from 47 reviews, but the 92% is from over 10,000 ratings.
Did the Criterion Collection sell that many Blu-rays and DVDs? I don't think so.
It had to, man. Yeah, this is the most popular Kubrick film of all time.
Wait, what? No, it's not. What the fuck are you what are you smoking now?
He's just making up shit right now.
Oh, obviously, yeah.
Flying by the seat of his pants.
I think this movie is a great foundation, both for Kubrick to launch his career and for other filmmakers to look at this movie as a template or a guide for nonlinear storytelling and fun heist movies that, you know, are bouncing around a little bit. And I see a lot of influences that this movie has done, and I see where Stanley Kubrick has grown. This movie is not a fucking 97%. What the fuck?
Well, I mean, Rotten Tomatoes. Because Rotten Tomatoes is actually scoring that higher than Clockwork Orange at 86%.
They have lost their goddamn mind.
Full Metal Jacket at 90%. Eyes Wide Shut at 76%. The Shining at 83%.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so this is the
Shining
best.
Shining is 83% and this is 97%.
Yeah.
That is some goddamn bullshit. I no longer trust their system. Their rating system is flawed and they have skewed it in the wrong direction. You've been listening to the Movie Grumps.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so by sending us an email to moviecrewpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at moviecrewpod. Jared, where can the audience follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at checkthegate.
Griggs, where can they follow you?
I'm on Instagram at Griggsy Media. That's G-R-I-G-G-S-Y Media.
And Kristen, where can they follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Kristen Magdalene. That's Kristen with a K and an I.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Elkins Edits. And we're going to close out the show tonight with a little bit of score that was composed for the film. I know that is like totally crazy for Stanley Kubrick, who is like, I only use pre-existing tracks.
That's okay. He kind of did that in this movie already. Blink, 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 blink. Three different times in the movie, I sang the next notes before they actually played them because I knew where it was going to go. I was like, yeah, that was a totally unexpected composition. Okay, cool.
Well, I think they only had like three pieces of actual music that we recorded. I don't know. I could be talking out of my ass. Anyway, we're going to play the main title. We're going to play the main titles. And this is from composer Jared Fried. No, I'm sorry. Oh, I was fucking, goddamn.
Wait, are you talking about
Gerald
me?
Who are you Fried. Fucking? Sorry, I was staring at your face, and I just wanted to say Jared.
You're like, this motherfucker's fried.
Deep fried.